Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
It's almost my birthday.
And I'm Black Thunder.
It's not really almost my birthday. We're a couple weeks off. And we are the Watchers in the Basement. But it ties into this episode.
We're like 3 weeks off from your birthday.
Let me have my moment.
Okay. I was not expecting that.
I know.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are here today to celebrate Brittany's almost birthday, which is 3 weeks away, and discuss episode 4 of X-Men 97. And, you know, this whole show has been very nostalgic for all of us, but I feel like episode 4 kind of like gave us like an extra dose of nostalgia. Brittany, I want to start with you. What did you think about this episode overall?
Man, it was fun. I had a lot of questions, especially after that first time watching, and after the second time watching, still have a lot of questions. But I love the very 90s tie-in to like arcades, because that obviously was like a huge deal back in the day. And I love that we get to see these characters, especially one who loves video games. That's what she's, you know, pretty much, I won't say pretty much, but she is known for it very much, Jubilee. She gets sucked into her own video game. We get to see it all in 16-bit, y'all. Like, that's crazy. That's hilarious. Like you said, Justin, very nostalgic, and it was fun, but I do have a lot of questions, and I'm so happy that Frank is here, because Frank just knows all the ins and outs about everything X-Men. So Frank, I'm gonna turn it over to you. What are your thoughts on episode 4 of X-Men 97?
I loved it. I loved it from the standpoint of like the Easter eggs of nostalgia for me. Like from the video game cartridge of like, that was literally the title from like X-Men Mutant Apocalypse on Super Nintendo. I had that game. So when I saw that on the Montendo, that little Sega Genesis hybrid console they had in the episode, I was screaming top of my lungs, oh shit, that's Mutant Apocalypse. Like I loved it. I loved the pop culture references with A Different World and Who's the Boss. And I love the 16 gigabyte like look to like some of the fighting scenes they had in Mojo World. The comic book references, like I loved it all. Like I read this comic book coming up. So like it was like watching it come to life, which is kind of cool. Cause we've had Mojo episodes in like the OG series, and then Wolverine the X-Men. You've had incarnations of that episode, but like this one literally followed like the Montendo comic book in early 90s, would you believe? So
wow, so there was a comic book about the Montendo thing?
It wasn't called Motendo, but the older version Jubilee, her like in the comic book, she's literally a Mojo slave who got caught, and like they in Mojo other version Jubilee, and that's one that survived, and that's one that's helping Jubilee now. And I don't know if people who don't know this, but like the Jubilee who voiced Jubilee in the early 90s is voicing the older Jubilee in this cartoon, which is pretty cool.
Exactly.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, the younger Jubilee is voiced by a different actress, mm-hmm. because the one who voiced her in the original show kind of made the point of like, you know, Jubilee is supposed to be an Asian character and the voice actor's not Asian, so she's like, maybe we should have an Asian person voice the character. So, but you're right, Frank, she does voice Abscissa, who is the parallel or alternate universe version of an older Jubilee, which we get to see in this episode. This episode for me, to me, the video game stuff is all very nostalgic, because, you know, like Frank, you mentioned the console that is in Jubilee's room is like a mashup between a Super Nintendo and a Sega Genesis. The console itself looks like a Super Nintendo, which Super Nintendo is my all time favorite console. I played the hell out of mine. I still have mine, and I still play Super Tecmo Bowl 3 if I wanted to, I could play it right now. But the controllers were like Sega Genesis like controllers. So I like how they kind of mixed and matched that. And then the fact that when Roberto and Jubilee get sucked into the game they're playing is the old school arcade game from the early 90s. Like it's the game. Brittany, this might be a good time. I have some visual aids I wanted to share with everybody if you're watching this on YouTube. So here's a look at the arcade system, which I'm sure if you went to an arcade at any point in the 90s, you definitely saw one of these two machines. This one was a four-player version, But there's also a 6-player version of the game. And I remember seeing both. And I don't think I ever played the 6-player, but I definitely played the 4-player. And it was so cool how they brought that game back in this show. And I just, that's like amazing, because I definitely played this one right here that we're showing on the screen right now, this 4-player one. I definitely played this version. And in this game, you could only pick 6 characters. It was like Wolverine, Cyclops, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Dazzler, and
Storm.
Storm. There you go. That's it. That's the 6. And there's even a joke in the episode about Dazzler, about how like Mojo wanted to get her, but she had another gig or something. So I just remember like this purple, this, if you're watching us now on YouTube, that arcade cabinet, that purple arcade cabinet was like, it was like a staple at every arcade for me as a kid. Like, just, you know, like, just like how
it's iconic.
Be like a Pac-Man, there'd be like a Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. There was always an X-Men arcade game in every arcade that I went into. So that stuff was really cool. Tying all the video game stuff was like excellent. We'll get to all the story points in a little bit, but I just love that stuff. I thought that's what a cool way to like, I would never have thought of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's such a cool way to like bring something back as you're bringing the show back. This is like a masterclass, this whole show, honestly.
Well, and I think you're right to say that, Justin, because over here in the chat, we've got some followers here. We've got Marcella, aka Marcy, who is in the chat. She's like, small fries. I'm the birthday Big Mac. Listen, yeah. I felt that.
Shout out to Marcy, who usually joins us for these podcasts.
Yeah.
But she's not feeling well. So hopefully she gets better. Hopefully she'll be back next week as we review episode 5. But
feel better, Marcy. She also loved the Who's the Boss and a Different World references.
Yeah.
When I saw Divorce Court, Summers versus Gray, dead. Absolutely dead. But I could have sworn the first time I watched it, it said Summers versus Grays, because we have 2 Jean Grays, y'all. Mm. Like, you missed a...
You know, that might be... Is that what it said? Because I don't remember.
I want to say the first time I watched it, which was... Last week, maybe a couple of days after it aired, it said Summers versus Grays. Grays as in plural. But yeah. I rewatched it this morning, like 2 hours ago, mm-hmm. and it just said Summers versus Gray. So maybe Disney fixed it, or maybe it's like a mandala effect or something. Like, I have no idea. But I want to say it would have made sense, y'all. It would have made sense. Yeah. But yeah, so Marcy, thank you so much for joining us in the chat. Also, hello, hola. To Christian of McDorks, appreciate you being here as well, a fellow Marvel and X-Men fan. And also King B. Johnson joins us again in this live chat, hashtag Jubilee18, hashtag Solar Eclipsing, amongst many other comments here. So thank you all so much for joining. And Christian says to Marcy, feel better.
Sorry, I've got sirens on my end, so I was trying to like not speak up if...
Don't get sucked into a video game, Justin.
There we go.
We need you here. we need you to carry us.
You know, speaking of the video game part, and once again, Frank, last week you mentioned Mojo on as just kind of randomly as a part of describing the Spiral character who we saw in episode 3. And then, like, once again, a character you mentioned briefly becomes like a focal point of the episode. I'm just like, it's crazy I keep doing this. So I'm wondering what you're going to like predict for next week.
I swear it's luck. I have no idea what's coming. I'm just like
lies.
Spitballing.
Lies.
Here.
He's a mutant. He knows the future. That's what it is.
If I knew the future, I would not be working a 9-to-5. I promise you.
Listen,
yeah.
You would have won the Powerball. That was 1.3 billion. I get you. I
feel Bingo.
You. I feel you. And but, you would share it with the rest of us, right? Right.
Absolutely. We all get in houses. Let's get it.
Sounds good to me. As far as Mojo, though, he is a kind of an obscure character. Now, there's 2, at least 2 Mojo episodes in the OG series that I can remember. But I think that's it. So, like, it's not a character that was, like, very prominent. And even those episodes that Mojo has in the original series, they're kind of like bottle episodes. They don't really, they're kind of unto themselves. You know, you don't even really need to be watching the rest of the story. You can kind of just jump into those and jump out. So I thought it was really cool to bring that character back. And it's also a skinnier version of Mojo, which I thought was pretty interesting. And the reason why he's skinnier is because he feeds off ratings, and he's doing bad in the ratings game, so now he's pivoting to video games. I love how they're like, he's pivoting to video games. Such a funny, like, a corporate phrasing. Brittany, what'd
you... really bad. He lost about 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, he's definitely skinny. Brittany, this is probably your first experience with Mojo, right? What'd you think about the character?
Yeah, you know, I didn't get a chance to rewatch the OG series. Not like you did, Justin. You kind of burned through those pretty quickly. I didn't get the chance to do that. So, no, I have very little to zero recollection of Mojo. And when I first saw him pop up on the screen, I almost wanted to scream because I was like, what the hell is that? You know, just like, what is this creature that is before us? And the way that the self-awareness, I have to give it to him, because he did say he's like this kind of like extraterrestrial psychotic. The way he described himself was very on par. Like I said, he's self-aware. He knows who he is, and he's here, baby. Like that's all there is to it. And he, grotesque is the word I want to use. Yeah. He was pretty grotesque when ratings started booming, because Jubilee is all like, yeah, I'm here for my video game. Like who wouldn't want to stay young forever and relive the glory days and, you know, have their own video game. And once that happened, you know, he got large again and that was kind of gross, but, you know, that was interesting. I think I was a little bit more interested with the, Frank, help me out here. The six arm woman who was, you know, kind of being tech.
Spiral,
there you go. Can think of her name. Who was being, you know, tech support, and him tossing some lines to her, saying like, "Hey, you know, you need to squish that bug." And she goes, "Well, this is what you get for, you know, firing all tech support." And it's like, it's real. You know, it's real. You know, you fire everyone, and you think you can give everything to one person. Doesn't work out like that.
Not only did he fire them, he killed them. He was like, "I squashed them bugs because they didn't kill the bug."
Nah, fair enough. Real quick, Frank, before we move onward, Marcy wants to know, what would your mutant name be? Ooh, let's let Frank ponder on that. Oh Lord, don't let it be something dirty. Let him ponder on that. We'll get back to that
for a little bit.
Anyway,
well, remember, Marcy's not in the private chat tonight, so
no, she's not.
She could be though.
Oh Lord,
she kind of runs the private chat, to be honest. So
he's got some bars.
Yeah, so Frank, you mentioned Easter eggs, and I wanted to start off from the very top in this episode, and I know this has happened every single episode, I haven't really kind of gone back and kind of you know, watch the tape and broken it down. But in this episode, in the character intros, there's like every week there's like new little clips. And I don't know if y'all have noticed this, or Frank, I don't know if you noticed this, but in this week's episode, like in the intros, you've got Jubilee like fighting Mojo. She's protecting Longshot, which is an episode from the OG series. I think it's in the first season. You've got the Phoenix is fighting Cyclops. We see Forge, he's in a yellow and blue X-Men suit. He's got his bandana on. Morph is fighting with Sinister, and then Charles Xavier has visions of Emma Frost in the Hellfire Gala. Frank, have you noticed these? And if so, I mean, obviously, I guess they're kind of trying to tip us off to what's coming. I mean, with this episode, they show us Mojo and Jubilee right off. That was the main part of the episode. But what have you noticed about these little Easter eggs at the beginning?
I noticed it was real quick, but Professor X trying to penetrate the Hellfire Club and White Queen blocking his psychic connection, which tells me that the Hellfire Club is going to show up this season, and which tells me that Professor X may show up in the finale. I don't think you place him in that particular intro for no reason. I think you'll see Sebastian Shaw. I think you'll see, you know, Emma Frost. And the rest of the Hellfire Club. I'm pretty excited because that's one of my favorite like evil factions in the X-Men series. And Emma Frost is like, she's an OG. Like her power, her telepathy is on par with Charles Xavier. she's not Jean Grey as far as like telepathy wise, but she's on par with Charles Xavier. Like they have at it. And there's a series. I mean, later on, when Charles dies like the ninth time, she and Cyclops are leader of the X-Men as well. So, yeah, she starts off as a villain and becomes an anti-hero and becomes a antagonist. But yeah, the Hellfire Club is that's a club you don't want to fuck with. They're very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I know that, you know, they've done that with the other episodes. I probably should go back and check those out. But it's just like this show has so many things going on. It's and even though this is the shortest episode, this is only a 29-minute episode. So they still, even though it's a few minutes shorter than the other ones, they still pack in a lot of things to look for, and, you know, I guess hints for what's coming in the future. Brittany, what'd you think about that? Did you notice that, or have you been paying attention to that stuff?
Yeah, for sure. Aside from the episode itself, I do try to pay attention to the intros because they seem to change every single episode. And whether it's something that pertains directly to that episode or something that kind of like will be used in the future, those are just things that, like y'all are talking about, it could come to pass. Now, here in the chat, Christian shares with us, the scenes from the credit are actually remade from a past event, but they could show up. So, and he further says, I love the way they remake old scenes, kind of wish they would remaster the old series and redo it all. I'm with that, actually. I think this series looks really clean. It's not as choppy as it, you know, was back in the day, but it's really interesting to see like these little Easter eggs, and I'm not like super knowledgeable about these characters and these events, like how, you know, Frank and you are, Justin, but like I'm really looking forward to every episode and every intro that we get, not only because of the theme music, there y'all, but you know, it's interesting for sure, and how, you know, these characters interact with one another, because I was very surprised about Forge, and I know we'll talk about Forge later on in this episode, but I was very surprised about what transpires between Forge and Storm in this episode.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that part. And that, actually, that's a good point you're making. The episode is split in two. It's a, you know, the first half is all about Jubilee and Roberto and Mojo, and the second half is all Forge and Storm. So that's also something that happened in the OG series, where you just have, it's almost like two mini episodes smashed together, which I think is kind of a cool touch, you know? Let's get to...
There's another thing I want to talk about too, real quick. In the intro of this episode, you see X-Factor. They kind of zoom in on, they show you Polaris, Magneto's daughter. They show you Alex Summers, Havoc, Cyclops' brother. And then they zoom in real quick past Multiple Man to Forge. It kind of gives you insight, like, hey, Forge is going to be a pinnacle, like a pivotal character in this episode, which I thought was kind of cool. I went frame by frame, and to see X Factor, you might get them this season as well, because of like, because Forge is such a Forge is like the co-leader of X Factor, so to see that. You don't randomly show X-Factor at all teams in the X-Men intro if they're not going to be a major player sometime in this series.
And they were featured in the OG series, right?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. It was an Iceman episode. Iceman came back and he had a love affair with Polaris, and, you know, Polaris is with Havoc now. And it kind of became a whole thing in that particular episode, Iceman coming back to the X-Men.
I get kind of mixed up because you've got Alpha Flight, you've got X-Factor, you've got...
Excalibur.
Right. What's the group that Deadpool's always like his in the movies?
X-Force.
There we go. Yeah. So it's like a lot of X, a lot of, like, you know, a lot of names to keep up that are kind of similar. So yeah, that's cool. You noticed that.
While you're mentioning that, Justin, and while we're kind of like still on the subject of the intro and the Easter eggs, the fact that like Magneto is the first mutant to be introduced in the intro, and granted he can manipulate metal, but he brings up these two metal beams and he makes them into an X, and I was just like, that's very interesting that is, you know, being done mm-hmm. now that he's the leader of the X-Men. Now, granted, Charles Xavier's team and he inherits them, but it's like, you would think, or maybe it's just me, you would think Magneto would like attempt to change the name of the team to like something else. that's not X-Men. I don't know. I just, it's just that little thing I thought was kind of interesting.
I think the branding is too strong. You can't change it.
Oh, well, yeah, know? But I mean, for obvious reasons, but I'm just saying it's Magneto, right. Though. Like,
yeah.
You think he'd make an attempt.
Maybe he will. Maybe we'll get a new name later on in the series. Who knows? I certainly don't. I'm not an expert on this stuff by any means. So I'm just along for the ride.
You know who else isn't an expert about Magneto?
Who's that?
Poor Morph. The line that he shares at the table when they're discussing about Jubilee and what to do for her birthday and how Magneto's like, oh, she'd be better off like training if she's going to live in a world that hates her. And Morph's all like, oh, you know, looks like someone didn't get a pony for his 16th birthday. Yeah. And Magneto's all like dead face, you know, my parents perished when I was a child. I was like, oh, shit. I was like, this just got awkward really fast.
Yeah, this was an episode where we only got the whole crew together at the very beginning when they're, you know, they're around like the kitchen table talking about Jubilee's birthday. But then after that, it's just, you know, it's kind of these like, you know, paired off missions. And I kind of like that. I kind of like, especially for characters that aren't, you know, getting the spotlight, you know, on them enough. I thought this was a good time to kind of mix in like kind of like solo missions in some ways to kind of, you know, like, not to deviate from the main storyline, but just kind of like, you know, throw a little wrinkle in there. Cause you know, obviously we're building to something with every character. So I enjoyed that part of it. And the main side mission or the first side mission in the show was of course about Jubilee. It's her birthday. She wants to go to an arcade for her birthday. She's her and Roberto are kind of like, seem like they're together or they're trying to be, but we may have a major problem because, she loves video games and he doesn't. He's like, you know, he's too cool to play video games. Frank, what do you think about the budding romance here with Jubilee and Sunspot, aka Roberto?
It's cool. You give Jubilee a character that she can relate with on the show. Like in the OG series, mm-hmm. She's the baby. Like she's like 16 when the series starts, and like nobody's close to her age. I know she hangs on the Wolverine kind of like an older mentor, but it's kind of cool to have like somebody that she can relate to as far as age and like pop culture wise and, you know, even a love interest. I'm not sure how old Roberto is in this incarnation of the series, but they seem pretty close in age, and it's kind of cool to see. And I think too, it's given Jubilee like growth as far as like, you know, not trying to see her as a little girl anymore, her being older and her turning 18 and like being able to harbor emotions and connections with the opposite sex. So I mean it's a good way to grow the character a little bit incrementally, so mm-hmm. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, Marcy in the chat says she loves how wholesome it was that an 18-year-old wanted to still go to an arcade for her birthday. It's the little things in life.
I tell you what, the Magneto and Cyclops and them are very trusting to have Jubilee up in her room by herself with Sunspot with the door closed. Like it's pretty trusting.
Okay, so I have to ask the question about the elephant in the room. Did they smash?
I don't think so. No.
You don't think so?
Maybe no. Controllers.
But
I don't think so, because like Jubilee seems like she comes with very innocent, like nothing's sexually suggestive. Like that's in the five seasons or six seasons of this series, that's the most sensuality you've seen out of Jubilee like ever, and it was a kiss. So like I think they're trying
she's
to keep that.
Eight. She's 18. It's the innocent ones that you have to watch out for, Frank. I mean,
speaking from experience, I see. I got you.
I mean, Roberto used his powers to like help save her life in the game, right? You know, he's reserved because at the beginning when they got sucked into that video game, he didn't want to use his powers because he's like, what if there's cameras and my mother sees? And she's like, do you think everything's always about you? He's like, yes. Like typical, you know, typical male. But you know, even older Jubilee, alternate universe Jubilees kept referring to them as lovebirds and this and that, what have you. So, I mean, you know, maybe she obviously knows something more than what 18-year-old Jubilee and Roberto know. And I don't know, just like you said, it's very trusting of Magneto and Cyclops to leave her alone with a boy in her bedroom. She's 18. She can do what she wants.
Plus, I think they were smashing Wolverine would have smelt it. So just saying. He has a very keen sense of smell. That's all I'm saying.
But he didn't know the difference between the two Jean Greys. Okay. Anyway, just saying. He's like, the more the merrier. That's what he was saying about Jean Greys. Like, that's what he was looking for.
I mean, Mr. Sinister is like an excellent cook, though. Let him cook. You know what I'm saying? Like, Chef Sinister over there just baking up people. I still can't get over that. How he says, like, he's like, I made you. No, I baked you. It's like, gross, man. Like,
no, just the gross, mate. Just say the mate. Gross, the gross part was, he's like, you can call me daddy. That was the gross part. Oh, man. Yeah. So I'm just saying, I mean, I think they smashed. I'm just saying.
I mean, if she shows up showing in episode 6, then, you know, I'll give it to you.
Oh, Lord almighty. Oh yeah, people in the chat here are having some fun with the with the Wolverine senses and whatnot. Marcy, bruh. Yeah, that one killed me. Yeah, Christian, you're right. He couldn't smell the wrong Jean. It didn't matter. He just wanted all of it. All of her.
I mean, to be fair, Sinister is like the OG geneticist when it comes to like mutant gene splicing and cloning and like he fooled everybody. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't just Wolverine, so.
No, I mean, I'm just saying Wolverine wouldn't have had a problem with it. He said, hey, Sinister, hook it up, yo. Moving on.
Speaking of hooking it up, Jubilee finds a hooked up console in her room that's not one that was already there. She thinks that Rogue gave her a present for her birthday. It's the aforementioned Super Nintendo / Sega console, the Motendo. And she fires it up, and her and
she doesn't do shit. She doesn't fire it up. It fires up on its own.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. It basically just like consumes her and Sunspot, and they get sucked into this game. And Frank, you know, earlier we were talking about all the nostalgic stuff and Easter eggs, and you know, this game like allows Jubilee to basically like relive all the X-Men's adventures, especially from the first, you know, from the OG series, and like right off the bat, they step into this phone booth after transporting the game, and they're going to Genosha. And as Jubilee mentioned, it's back in the day, Genosha, from the first season. And she mentions how her and Storm and Gambit were like on a vacation there. Why don't you fill in everybody about that? Because that's in the first few episodes of the first season. Like how important that storyline plays out for that series.
Yeah. So doing the mutant and human conflict, mutants were trying to seek refuge from like being bothered by humans and being attacked and, you know, berated by humans. So Genosha was a place that Magneto founded, and he created it as a refuge for mutants to just go away and just be left alone, live in paradise. It's a beautiful place. Magneto didn't know, it was around his nose, that Garrick, which was a guy who created the Sentinel program, they were harboring an undercover plan to create Sentinels and manufacturing them. And the manufacturer of all the Sentinels was this master Sentinel called Master Mold. And they and the paradise, the resort on Genosha, became a mutant prison. And pretty much a slave trap for mutants. And Gambit, Storm, and Jubilee, like those neck braces you saw in episode 1, those were used to pretty much subdue their powers. And they were forced into slavery, labor to like create Master Mold and create the Sentinel program. So that's what happened. The X-Men found out about it, and they destroyed the Sentinel program, which they thought they did, until it was rehashed in all the series.
Yeah, no, that's such a huge part of that first season. And then it carries over into, I think, the second or third season. But I just love how, like, it's like literally they're kind of going back through the, like, I mean, we're getting so much of like what happened in the original series, but the way they're doing it, so creative in that they're using a video game to show these memories. I just think that's really cool.
It's very appropriate for, obviously, Jubilee, who it's video character focused episode on Jubilee. It's the thing that she loves. It's the thing that was a way for her to relive the, you know, days of old, right? And it was incredibly creative, and the very fact that it's so nostalgic of the 90s and so something that we remember very well, you know, today's youth probably won't. I say today's youth like I'm so old. Good Lord, save me. Anyway, but you know, it's fun. It's fun to watch, and the very fact that when they start going through the different levels of the, like the Savage Lands and whatnot, you see that all done in 16-bit, which is just really, really cool and just extremely well done. Did y'all happen to notice when they were first dropped into the first level that there was like I think it was a wanted poster in the back? It was some sort of poster in the back. Did y'all happen to? I'm sorry?
It's from the video game.
Oh, okay. The fact that they actually had the Scarlet Witch in that poster, along with, I think it's a Quicksilver.
I saw Quicksilver. I didn't see Scarlet Witch.
Right next to her. Right next to her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you were to go back and zoom in, you'll see the head or the crown or what do you want to call her headgear. That's Scarlet Witch.
I missed that.
I was like, that's cool. Really cool because, you know, yeah. in the X-Men universe, they are the children of Magneto. And
in this course, universe, they are.
Yeah. Right, in this universe, right.
Yeah.
But like from the movies and such, mm-hmm. that wasn't a thing. So like I really like that little nod to putting them where they actually belong, you know, even if they can't like outright say it. But yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah. And Brittany, you mentioned like the stages. So they give us like the first stage is the dystopian street where they're fighting Sentinels and stuff like that. The second stage is the Savage Land, which also features Sauron. Is that how you say it, Frank? Yeah. He's the green winged dinosaur character.
Yeah.
As in J.R.R. Tolkien Sauron?
Same spelling, same pronunciation, but very different character. Yeah.
Interesting.
He played a pivotal role in the Savage Land episode. It was like a four-part Savage Land episode with Magneto and Charles. In the Savage Land, you pretty much, as a mutant, you lose your powers. Something about that mystic area so it's like a hidden world off the grid, and Mr. Sinister has a base there, and like they, Charles and Magneto got stuck there, and Sauron was like he's one of Sinister's henchmen. He was trying to apprehend Magneto and Charles during this that episode back in the OG series season one.
Strong feelings from Christian in the chat. He said he hated those episodes. Damn.
I watched them.
Really feel.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, in fairness, I don't remember loving those episodes, but I definitely watched them like in the last month or so. So they're still kind of fresh in my mind. Also, the final stage is Asteroid M. I don't think Asteroid M has really been talked about much in this version of the series. Frank, could you explain to everyone what Asteroid M is?
Yeah, so after Genosha was an epic fail, Magneto decided to go out of space and pretty much create another mutant colony on his asteroid that he harvested, and his goal was, and they kind of mentioned in episode two, his goal was to start a mutant assault on the humans. So he was rounding up mutants to start this war on Asteroid M, and his mutant renaissance failed miserably. But it was pretty much a second base for mutants to get away and him to create followers to support his cause of like dominate humankind. And he almost did. It was an episode in the OG series, his second hand. He later on kind of got off the whole like I want to dominate humans. And his second in command was like getting solved, and he kind of like betrayed Magneto, and Astro M got destroyed in the process. But yeah, that was another failed mini rebellion by Magneto and his crew.
Yeah. Magneto, he had good ideas. He didn't have the proper staffing though. You know, he really needed a stronger HR team.
Yeah. Honestly,
just to really find the talent that he required to pull off his grandiose plans.
For as smart as he is, he has very unreliable people that is on his, like the Brotherhood of Mutants, like you know, they're not the sharpest, you know, knives in the tool shed, man. And it's showcased over and over again.
Yeah.
So kind of
go ahead, Brittany.
Well, I was gonna go back to here in the chat. Marcy had asked or said something earlier in the chat. She has questions about Spiral and the extra life, because it was in this level that Roberto gets really injured. He's on the verge of dying because Mojo had told him that, you know, if they die in the game, they pretty much die in real life. And so it's in this moment where Jubilee sees like an extra life. It's a X-Men, you know, crest, and it's glowing, and it just so happens to appear. Marcy, I'm going to give you the opportunity to, you know, write in the chat what your questions are about Spiral and that extra life. But that's just something I wanted to bring up to the forefront and keep that in mind, y'all.
Yeah, oh, Marcy followed up with it. Yeah, go ahead.
She did. She says it didn't seem like an accident that she left it in. So, Frank, would you say that Spiral is actually like helping the Jubilee and Roberto at this point, or is she helping like the older Jubilee because, you know, she was like a beta and she's like beaten every level, she's the only one left? Did Spiral just want to be rid of Mojo herself?
Yeah, people don't realize Spiral, she's a slave. Like, she's not getting paid handsomely to be Mojo's tech person or whatever. Like, she was raised in this world, and Mojo, it's kind of like a Thanos and Gamora thing. Like, Mojo, like, acquired her at a young age, and, like, that's all she knows. And at that point, she's just kind of, like, she's kind of tired of it. Like, in the OG series, Longshot, she has love, and that's her love interest. And she's conflicted because, like, Longshot is, like, this superhero that, like, this actor that's in this world that Mojo hires to be, like, his A-lister. And Spiral is like, you know, the henchman for Mojo, but she's conflicted because she loves Longshot so much, and it becomes a back and forth. But she does her bidding, but like towards the end, you can tell she's just tired of like being a slave to Mojo and being in his world. So yeah towards the end, you kind of see her helping, or like not really doing her just due to like apprehend like the glitch in the system. So
yeah, I think it's more that, because I think Abscissa, who is the future alternate version of Jubilee, is really the one who helps out Roberto and Jubilee, whereas Spiral just is kind of like, hey, I'm not gonna, like, I'm here to help, but I'm not helping too hard, you know, like I'm kind of trying to stay out of it. So
she's like, I'm here but not here for a long time, so right. Yeah, and Christian seems to believe too that older Jubilee was the one who helped with the extra life. He says at least it looked like that to him about hacking and whatnot. So it's very likely, but it just also kind of seemed like Spiral was in on it as well. So if, like, there was a partnership that, let's say, happened between the two, you know, that's great, because it seems like they both wanted to just be out of it and rid of Mojo altogether. So yeah.
So back to the video game and back to Magneto. The old school helmeted Magneto is presented to us as the final boss. Now, if you watch WrestleMania over the weekend, like Frank and I did, you know the real final boss is The Rock, because he killed it. The Rock was awesome at WrestleMania.
Fucking awesome, dog.
He was so good.
Oh, God.
I love the final boss gimmick. It might be the best thing he's ever done. That's saying a lot for one of the greatest icons in the history of wrestling.
It might have been in the corporate Rock gimmick that he had in the 90s.
I don't know.
It rivals it pretty well.
No, it was great. But in this game, or in this show, the final boss is Magneto, until it isn't. Then it becomes Mojo. He becomes the actual final boss. Then the three of them have to combine. The three of them have to team up, being Jubilee, Roberto, and the older Jubilee, Abscissa, with, like we said, with a little assist from Spiral, I think, to take him out. And then we get to Jubilee and Roberto sharing a kiss. And that's pretty much this. That's a wrap on the first half of this episode. Brittany, do you have any like final thoughts about where this part leaves off or anything we didn't mention?
Yeah. So a quick question, and maybe I just need someone to put it in layman's terms for me to understand. The older Jubilee is just a digital duplicate of Jubilee. Is that correct to say? Because I was like, where the hell did she come from and age up and all this other stuff? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, are we already working with like a multiverse sort of storyline? Yeah.
So Mojo has the ability to like transcend multiverses, and this is a Jubilee. Like he Absence mentions it a little bit in the episode. Like he killed off all the other Jubilees that was in the game that he kidnapped from other multiverses, and she's the lone one, and she's been there for so long, she's now been able to counteract pretty much every chess move that Mojo can do.
Right.
So she's pretty much like a virus that. She's a virus to Mojo, like she knows how to like counteract everything. So when this Jubilee shows up, you know, it's like I think a lot of it too for Absence, because in the comic book, she's guilt. She's there's a lot of guilt because a lot of the Jubilees she tried to save prior are died, and like now that Jubilee is in this version of Jubilees is in the video game, she's doing everything she can to save her and keep her alive.
So. Thank you for the clarification. So on that as well, older Jubilee has some sort of powers that are different from the Jubilee that we know. Is it like enhanced? Is it just like completely different altogether? Is this something that our Jubilee is going to be able to work towards?
That's a great fucking question, girl. You asking the right questions, girl. So
I try.
Jubilee at the turn of this series, Jubilee was created for the series. Like she's like canon for the show. And she's 16. And when you watch season one, the first couple seasons actually, she's still trying to learn how to harness her power. So she doesn't look powerful, right? When you read the comic books later on in the 90s and in the late 90s, she's very powerful. She can manipulate kinetic energy. That's what she ends up being able to do. So we see Absence is the final, she's the final version of what Jubilee's going to be when she's of age. Like Absence is probably in her 30s, 40s at this point. She can manipulate kinetic energy. She can create explosives like Gambit can. Like she's really that bad bitch. Like she's really that, she's cold. And Jubilee's going to get there eventually. It's just, you know, she's just so young. But like, it's kind of like with Enemy Mutant. Like after you saw with Jean Grey, like in the early series, the flashbacks, Jean Grey, you know, she can't control her thoughts. Like she's cars are flying over the place, roofs are being destroyed. Yeah. Like when she gets older, she learns how to harness those powers. Now Charles is a fucking manipulator. He creates like barriers in her mind to where she can't fully unleash. But like most mutants, when the X gene pops up in their teenage years or adolescence, it takes them a while to like, you know, finally. Control that power and harness it. So
you said something about older Jubilee being in her 30s and 40s, and I reacted. Marcy, you and I are one girl, because 30s and 40s, that's where we are, and none of us are that gray. I was just like, oh Lord, because I was expecting her to be, you know, a little bit more than just 30s or 40s, but damn.
That's the stress of trying to stay alive in this motherfucking world.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. I'm over here, before we jump on the show, I'm over here saying like, oh, I've got one white hair sticking out right here. And then, you know, you go and say that about older Jubilee. Shit.
Hey, Brittany, speaking of the chat, I want to go to something that McDork said a little bit ago about, I think McDork is right about that. Whereas what Frank is saying about the comics is accurate. But in this show, this version of this Abscissa is a digital copy of Jubilee. Right. Like in the beta version. So the very first version of Jubilee. So that's why that this character is aged. It's not necessarily the character that I think is in the comic books. Now, obviously with comics and with these shows, anything is possible in the multiverse or in a universe where a TV executive can kind of just tap into any world and kidnap X-Men characters and do whatever. But I did want to point that out. I think that's the way this show is kind of leading us to kind of believe.
Right. And to further that point, and Christian, you're right. Absence shows up and confirms that Mojo prepped the game for Jubilee's arrival by creating digital clones for trial runs. And so that's where, like, you know, my initial question about older Jubilee comes from, because I heard that, but I didn't quite fully understand that, because I thought we were starting to, like, tap into this multiverse sort of storyline. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, can we just, like, not do that for right now? We already have that going on with the MCU. Like, and I understand, like, this is obviously going to happen in the comic book world, but I'm just like, there's just too much of it happening simultaneously. So it's just, I just wanted to get clarification. So thank y'all for doing that.
You know what this reminded me of, but it's kind of the reverse, is like in the Flash movie, the Dark Flash is kind of like the evil version of Abscissa from the show.
Ah, yeah.
It's kind of similar a little bit, you know, like it's just, I mean, it's the opposite, but it's like the fact that, like, it's an older grade kind of version of the same character. I saw the parallels, you know.
Yeah.
I'll just find any way to mention the Flash, though. So you can't really, you know, that's one of my, like, character flaws, I think, at this point.
Oh, Lord. Go check out our review on The Flash, y'all, here on The Watchers in the Basement. Don't forget to subscribe. Hit that like button on that video, because surprisingly, I enjoyed it. And I'm not a DC fan. Just saying.
It's a good movie. It was a good movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't worry, King B. I see your question here before the show wraps: Deadpool 3 or Joker 2. Listen, we still have a whole other part to dive into for this episode of X-Men 97. We're definitely going to answer that question shortly.
That question, actually, we might answer that tomorrow, because as we're recording this, it's Monday, April 8th. Tuesday, April 9th, the first trailer for Joker Folie à Deux, the sequel to the Joker movie that made $1 billion in 2019, drops on Tuesday, April 9th. We will be reacting to it tomorrow evening. So, we will definitely be talking about that question that King B is posing.
Yep, for sure.
But moving on to the second half of this episode, titled Life, Death, Part 1. It features Forge and Storm, and kind of picking up from what happened after episode 3 or episode 2. I don't, 3. Wasn't it 3 whenever Storm and Forge, you know, Forge finds Storm at a bar in Dallas? Yeah.
Yes.
So, Frank, what did you think about this episode overall, or this part of the episode? It's like a 10-minute stanza. What did you think about it?
Again, going to my comic book nostalgia phase, man. Life, Death is a comic book as well, comic book issue about Storm. And a lot of casual comic book fans, they think that Black Panther is like her first love or whatever, and like it's not even close. Like, she was fucking with Forge in the early 90s, like in the late 80s in the comic book world. So, a lot of people don't know that, but it's pretty much like Storm just finding herself, and it's more about Forge. I know they mentioned it in the show, like he was in a war, but they didn't specify. In the comic books, it was a Vietnam War, and that's where he lost his hand.
And the leg.
I can't remember if it was a leg too, but I know for sure the hand, for sure. Might have been a leg as well. Yeah, he lost a lot. Yeah, and his power is very unique too. Like, he can literally, like, he's like a human computer. He can, like, literally engineer anything out of from his mind. Now, for him, even though he can engineer anything, he can't create the materials that he needs. Like for example, like he could create a gun from 2099, but like the materials won't be available from the make it. So that's
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like an intuitive genius in a way.
Yeah. Elon Musk who?
Right? Well, go ahead, Justin.
Yeah. No, that's I just want to say, like, that's really interesting that he knows what he wants to create, but the materials that he needs haven't even been created yet, or they're not available. That's a very interesting wrinkle to a time traveling character.
But if Bishop or Cable were available, could he do all the things?
And you see a version of that in the OG series when he helps Bishop. I want to say, if I remember correctly, he created the collar for Bishop to go back and forth between future day and present day.
And that was something else in the intro of Bishop, like spiral, like he's falling and like, I don't know, sort of like rainbow sort of background that you know was going on. He had like a lot of hair, it looked like. So that was interesting to see too, where that plays into like OG or you know, now or future kind of situation, because he had been in, he actually had a title card, right, in the intro for the first episode, right? And then, like, obviously he went back, or he went to his time with Baby Nathan. So it's just like, we do away with Bishop's title card? Like, that's messed up.
But I do appreciate, like we mentioned earlier, how they're using the title card sequences as a way to have Easter eggs or kind of tell stories into it, unto itself. It's not just the same thing every week, and it evolves and how the show evolves. Like, if a character, you know, is gone or missing, that character's missing from the opening lineup. So again, this show just kind of does everything perfectly. It's really no notes, honestly.
And we didn't talk about this earlier. They show the Shi'ar Empire in the intro as well. You see Leandra, in the Empire. So it just they show a lot in this intro in episode 4. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if all this comes out this season. Maybe it's just going the next season as well. But something tells me, man, we might get Charles Xavier back in the finale. We might see Leandra as well. Because like last week we saw Charles Xavier. He's with the Shi'ar Empire. His body is harvested there and trying to bring his consciousness back to his body. So if anybody can do it, it's the Shi'ar Empire with their technology.
Well, dang. Okay. That's cool. Go ahead, Justin.
No, I was going to get your thoughts on just the whole Forge Storm relationship. He obviously wants it to be, you know, he's like, he confesses his undying love for her, like, right off the bat, and she's not having it.
She said, get the F out of here. Like, you played me for a fool. Like, you don't do that to my girl Storm. You just, no. She's been through so much, and then with the pretense of, like, I want to help you get that which you've lost, because obviously he's intelligent, genius, you know, feels that he is able to create some sort of device that would allow her to get back her powers. And when she's testing that out after she's gone through that little, I don't know what you call that device, that, like, you know, sorry for my sound effects, but she goes outside to call on the winds because of how much she misses, you know, being able to feel the wind and just whatnot. And she's unable to, and it just breaks her. Like, I felt terrible for her, because you get that little spark of hope when the trees start rustling, and it has nothing to do with her and her powers whatsoever. And when she's asking Forge about what he's done, and he confesses to him, saying, like, you know, the Department of Defense helped me get my ideas off the ground. And she's so betrayed, rightfully so. And so, like, I understand to a degree how Forge is trying to, like, right his wrongs. But don't do my girl Storm like that. Just no. You have what's coming to you, like, tenfold. And it kind of does happen. But yeah, that was messed up. That's messed up.
You know, Forge, he wants to help her. I mean, obviously he has the motive of he says he loves her, but also he feels guilt because, like you said, Brittany, he worked to create, you know, he worked for the Defense Department to build devices that would neutralize dangerous mutants, aka like the collars and potentially the weapon that the Executioner used on her. That was probably something that he helped develop. And so he feels bad that his genius is the reason why she doesn't have her powers. And so I thought that was a pretty good, way to spin the story.
And two, like the government took advantage of him. Forge was coming out of a low point of his life. He was in war, and he lost a lot, like, emotionally and physically. And this is a man who, he's a tortured genius. This is I don't know about in the show, but in the comic books, it's the 1960s. He has this intuitive mind to create all these great things, but doesn't have the materials to do it. Mm-hmm. So dealing with that, and like coming from a low point, come out of war, he's probably dealing with PTSD. Just because you're immune doesn't mean that you don't succumb to these things, these mental issues that a lot of people come out of war. So I'm not saying what he did was right, but when people are at the low point, you're trying to find purpose, and you know, at the time he was young. So, I mean, there are good and bad mutants. So in his mind, he's probably like, okay, well, I am doing a good thing by protecting, you know, innocent people from mutants who want to harm, you know, other mutants or other humans. So, and it's, I think it's a way of him trying to, you know, right his wrongs, like Justin said, of trying to help Storm. Cause like, again, he had a hand in it and he's trying to do the right thing. So.
He does point out though, that he didn't build the devices. It was just his idea. There was a scientist in Scotland who actually made the devices. Now, Frank, my question for you, whenever they said scientist in Scotland, I thought of one person. That is Moira MacTaggert. Do you think she's the one who built these weapons?
Bingo.
There we go.
She is Scottish, and she's a genius, and she worked for the government for many, many, many years. And
she was in the OG series.
She was in the OG series, yeah. She's human, and the government recruited her. In a time where they were outmanned and they needed a powerful mind to be able to combat the mutant problem. We hear on that. I was like, it's gotta be more, it has to be my attacker. And that's also Charles Xavier's love, one of Charles Xavier's main love interests as well. So
okay.
That's what I was gonna say.
Okay. Because yeah. I'm like, that name's very familiar. Yeah. I don't remember the OG series very well right now, but I'm like, I remember X-Men First Class.
Right.
Rose Byrne plays Moira MacTaggert. Okay.
And see, Moira in the OG series, Moira is like this lost love for Charles because she's with some other guy. I can't remember who that guy is, but like he's in the series with her. And Charles is kind of still pining for her, but she's got this new guy with her. So I bet they're gonna come into play very soon, I would think. Given they dropped that Scottish thing or Scotland or whatever. And so I would think it's got to be that character. Otherwise, why would you say that?
Yikes.
And I want to say, if I remember correctly, Muir Island is close to Scotland. That's where like Moira lives, if I remember correctly.
Okay. I know there's a lighthouse where she's located because that comes into play in the OG series. So the episode ends, and this was a character I had not heard of at all. And first, Brittany, I want to get your thoughts on the character, then I'll get Frank's. He'll have the background. But so Storm tries to ride off and get away from Forge and just, you know, forge her own path, so to speak. But she's brought back to Forge's place, which I guess is still in Texas, but it can't be Dallas because there's no mountain like that in the Dallas area.
Oh. I kind of didn't take it to be in Texas at all. Like, I have no idea what state could be, if it's the next state over, which would be like New Mexico. Like, there are mountains in New Mexico. I don't know enough about Forge to like make a proper assumption about like his culture, his heritage. I'm going out on a limb and assuming Native American. So I kind of want to lean more towards like either like a Southwest sort of region kind of thing. They just so happen to be in Dallas like at the same time. Her trying to make her own way and then to be like forcefully brought back
by a giant owl demon named Adversary.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, what in the hippogriff is this? if you know, you know, Harry Potter. But initially I was like, oh my god, it's a griffin. You know, it kind of gives off like this griffin sort of vibes, this, you know, medieval beast vibes. This is the part that left me the most confused in the episode. And if there's any callbacks to the OG series, it's lost on me. I'm going to turn it over to Frank, the genius over here, who can hopefully enlighten us.
Well, I don't know what part the adversary is going to play in this version. In the comic book, he is a Forge archenemy. He's a big archenemy of X-Factor. He's a mystical entity, and its goal is to destroy all of reality and reshaping in his form and in his image or its image. I don't know what sex the parademon is, but it's
is it a hoodie-hoo kind of like is that what he wants? Hoodie-hoo.
When I first saw the demon, I thought it was Shadow King at first, because it went a storm, Shadow King was like an adversary of Storm and Professor X in the OG series and Wolverine the X-Men. But this is more of a forge enemy, arch enemy. So I don't know why. And they could be combining character parallels between Shadow King and adversary as one, because he's dead set on getting Storm. So I don't know where to go with this. I really don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
Listen, you've made predictions before. Like, make a prediction here. We'll see if it comes into fruition. Use your mutant powers, Frank. And also, you need to give us your mutant name.
Black Magic will be my mutant name.
With a C or a K?
With a K. With a K.
Okay, yeah, okay. There we go.
As a spice to it.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, isn't there a magic in the X-Men universe with a K?
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, she's an X-Men, one of the X-Men members, okay. One of the different versions of the X-Men. But my guess, I don't think the X-Men show right away. I think X-Factor shows up. I think Forge puts the bat call in for X-Factor. So I think we'll see Havoc. I think we'll see Mr. Strong Guy. I think we'll see Wolfsbane, Polaris, Magneto's daughter. I think they're going to show up to save the day, because they have no idea where Storm's at. They don't know. So, yeah. And as far as I remember, Jean is still kind of out of it. So I don't think she'll be ill-equipped to handle Cerebro right now, to even find Storm. So I think X-Factor are going to have their light in the sun. Now, from what I've read, they're not going to show light part two of this two-part series. We'll see this in 2 weeks.
Right, so, right. There's another episode, and then we're going to return to it. Yeah,
correct.
Ah,
correct. Yeah.
Okay. I took that somewhere else where it's like, oh yeah, we're not going to get part two until like next season. It's like, bruh, no, no. There was something I was going to say earlier. Oh, I'm sorry if you answered this and I just like zoned out for a second because life. Do we have an idea? I mean, do you, Frank, have an idea exactly where adversary or this hoodie hoo thing took Storm? I mean, that's what I'm just going to call it. I'm going to call it hoodie hoo.
I'll guess a dimension of some sort. I don't remember a lot of. He's not a major character. He's not a major mainstay in the. He wasn't a character that I really hit with comic book readers, but he is a dimensional demon, so probably to another alternate dimension, he probably took her to, I think X Factor gonna save her. I think Forge is gonna make the call. That's my prediction for that. Will be what, episode 7? So that'd be my prediction.
Bro needs to redeem himself. So. Yeah,
I think the X Factor thing is a really good pick, because, like you said, they linger on that photo, I think, a couple of times, but one time, like, real slow, and they kind of pan over it. They didn't show us that for no reason. So I think that's a really good call. But I do have a question about, do we think that is Forge supposed to be maybe dead? Because he gets bitten by adversary, and you can see, like, he bites poison. Him, like, around his neck. And yeah, poison. You can kind of see the poison go through his body. So, because right after that happens, the owl creature, like, kind of like hugs Hoodie-hoo. Or yeah, gets Storm in her clutches and says, like, you're alive, which to me made me think, well, she's alive, but Forge maybe isn't. So I wonder, is he going to be brought back to life? Is that why it's life? Is life death? Is that also part of the title? Because of he's alive, he's dead.
I think the reason adversary said that to Storm was because Storm had questioned if this was death, not so much because of what may have happened to Forge, but because she herself questioned, like, is this like her death or death in general?
Okay.
If the being maybe was death. That's how I interpret it. I could 100% be wrong. I wouldn't be surprised if I am. Frank, your thoughts. Do you think Forge is dead, or do you think he survived?
I don't think he's dead. I think Adversary probably has some type of like host control over Forge. Forge might be just under its control.
To do its bidding.
Yeah. Interesting. I think he's a puppet master.
Okay. I kind of like that direction. Yeah. I'm with it. Lots of poisoning type things. Lots of stuff getting into people's systems so far in these four episodes. I mean, we see that with Baby Nathan, of course, you know, the Sinister virus, the wires from Motendo, you know, kind of taking over Roberto and Jubilee in the same fashion. And then now this with Forge. Yeah. Lots of poisoning and clutches and stuff happening.
Yeah, definitely. Any final thoughts on the episode as we kind of wrap up here?
This one really made me think, made me ponder, and made me have loads of questions, which is why I enjoy doing these podcasts with y'all so much, because obviously we have Frank, the human X-Men encyclopedia here, and then also the fact that we get to engage with our audience in the chat, which has always been so much fun, and to get their takes and their questions hopefully answered here during our live stream. So yeah, this episode definitely was a thinker. I'm very interested to see part two whenever that will be released. And it's the show keeps me interested. That's for damn sure. That's for damn sure.
Frank, any final thoughts on the episode, the series so far? What we can expect in the future?
It's moving fast. I love the pacing. I think we're going to get a lot of different teams, a lot of different factions in these next five, six episodes. I'm really excited about. Oh, another thing that I didn't talk about: the Adversary was voiced by Storm's character. I mean, the person who plays Storm voiced the Adversary as well.
The voice actor is who plays Storm also voiced Adversary.
Yep. Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah, so I thought it was kind of cool. She was doing double duty in this episode.
It's like Benedict Cumberbatch being Doctor Strange, and then also what was the villain that he come to bargain with in the first Doctor Strange movie?
Dormammu.
Yeah, he voiced Dormammu, so it's like he's just talking to himself the entire time. Mm. Not strange at all. No pun intended, but I'm funny. Not really. Anyway, moving on.
Again, in The Flash, there are three Ezra Millers. So top that, Benedict Cumberbatch. No, you know, one thing I want to say about this show is that these are very rewatchable episodes. I've watched every episode two or three times, and each time I kind of see something I missed the first time or the second time. So I really love the rewatchability of this show. And you know, Frank pointed this out. So as we told you, the first this episode is Motendo / Life Death Part One. Part two of Life Death, it doesn't come out until the sixth episode. The fifth episode, however, is titled Remember It. So I wonder if that's a Jean Grey, Scott Summers, Wolverine love triangle special. That's just my guess. It's called Remember It. So
I'm mature. I promise you.
Mature. What do you think, Frank? You think that's what we're headed to? Or is there something about remembering that is deep in this show or maybe in the comics that kind of the light bulb goes off in your head?
As far as what again?
Yeah, just the title. The title of the episode next week is Remember It.
Yes.
What do you think that is pertaining to?
I would say I would say something from Charles Xavier's past that plays a role in the bringing them back. So it could be more McTaggart. Like the Scotland thing was weird, man. That was like like with Charles being dead and like we haven't seen more of a Taggart yet, and like him, Forge mentioned one of the smartest scientists on the planet, that I think that plays a part in Charles Xavier's past of remember it. So I think she plays a vital role in Charles coming back.
Okay. That's a good, I mean, you've been perfect so far in your prediction. So like, I feel like we're going to get an Xavier heavy episode, or at least a Xavier's like aura will be represented in episode 5, I think.
Yeah. I think we see Charles Xavier next episode, just not in present day. I think we get a flashback.
There we go.
I went straight Mufasa on this when you said remember it. I'm all like, remember who you are. Like that's where I went. Like that's exactly where I went. Marcy says, I trust in black magic.
Keep that on the low, low, Marcy. Keep it on the low, low.
I like how Marcy's not even on the show and she gets the biggest laughs. You know, like, she doesn't
imagine
when she's on the
what
show,
our private chats look like, y'all.
Like, it's one thing when you're on the show and you have a microphone and you have a camera in front of you, but when you're not on camera and you're just typing stuff and you get the biggest laugh, it kind of hurts me a little bit. Because, like,
oh, God, stop it, Justin.
Kind of pride myself on being the funny guy, and I'm not the funny one this time. So,
you're not, and it's okay. Look at you living in shit. You're fine.
Jay, you can't be on all the time.
I know.
That is true.
And I'm not. I'm not on nearly enough of the time to be funny, but no, that's, great stuff with Marcy as always. I just want to like mention now that I looked it up, like, so Life Death Part 2 is episode 6. Episode 7 is titled Bright Eyes. That's kind of interesting. Episodes 8, 9, and 10.
Cyclops?
Maybe. I don't know. Episodes 8, 9, and 10 are a three-parter. It's called Tolerance is Extinction. So, ooh. I think Magneto might have a big play in that.
Oh yeah,
that three-part finale to this season. Oh, yeah. Just my guess. Yeah,
that gives me Days of Future Past vibes. I think we get a lot of like future present day shit going on.
Yeah, but you know, in the OG series, there were two or three episodes called Days of Future Past, like Part 1, Part 2. You know, like, and this is what, 20 years before the movie came out too.
Mm.
So
yeah,
in fact, I'm pretty sure it wasn't Forge and Cable and Bishop, those are the episodes they were in, I believe.
That was the first Days of Future Past, yeah, because Bishop came back to stop Gambit, or he thought it was Gambit, from killing Senator Kelly, but it was really Mystique cosplaying as Gambit. So
there we go. We haven't seen Mystique yet either, have we?
We haven't. We have not actual Mystique, but we saw morph into Mystique fighting the Friends of Humanity.
That's right. Interesting. A lot of characters still we haven't really seen in this show, like from the original series. Also, Nightcrawler is supposed to be in this season, so we shall see if he returns.
I like Nightcrawler.
And I don't know if y'all are familiar with the actor Theo James, but he is in. Yes. He is going to voice a character in this series, according to Wikipedia. So we'll see who he voices.
Love that.
Who the fuck is Theo James?
Theo James.
White Lotus season 2. Have you seen the White Lotus season 2?
Did you ever watch Divergent? Any of those movies? Never mind.
Okay. He hasn't really done any superhero stuff just yet, but I feel like he will. He's a British dude, but he has a great American accent, and like,
it's very good. Yeah.
I feel like he's going to be in some kind of superhero thing, whether it's DC or Marvel, probably very soon.
He was in Downton Abbey? No, nothing. Oh, Frank. He was in Underworld, Blood Wars.
The handsome dude.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, the opposite of from the male lead and Divergent. That guy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I need to know.
Yes. 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 That's gotcha. That's Theo James.
I knew his name.
I mean, people were so impressed with his work in The White Lotus season 2 that people thought he was going to be Lex Luthor in DC. Now that went to Nicholas Holt, who's also has X-Men ties.
Beast.
Yeah, he was Hank McCoy.
Yeah. So he's going to play Lex Luthor. But I, like I said, Theo James, mark my word, he's going to be in Marvel or DC in something going forward. And obviously, if he's doing stuff for the X-Men series, he's probably got the inside track at doing something for Marvel. But
for sure.
Anyway, he was like the biggest name person when I saw the cast list. I'm like, oh, he's like, I mean, that dude was like, I mean, he's probably younger than we are, or certainly younger than I am.
He's about my age, I want to say, if not a little bit younger.
Yeah, it's like he definitely wasn't a part of the original OG series of the show back in the early 90s.
No.
Yeah.
I can tell you he was, oh, wait, he's older than I thought. He's actually 39 years old.
Okay.
Born in 84.
Well, he does have some mysterious part that he's supposed to play. And all it says on Wikipedia, he plays a fan favorite. So I'm like, I mean, that could be well, a not, ton of.
Not Marcy's fan favorite from Downton Abbey, apparently. She says she hated him. Anyway, yeah, y'all.
Yeah. So that does it for our wrap up of X-Men 97 episode 4. Now you know what we think about this episode. We want to know what you think about it. And Brittany, how can people tell us?
Well, as always, we encourage everyone to, one, subscribe to this YouTube channel, like this video if you've enjoyed chatting with us about X-Men 97, and leave us your thoughts in the live chat. The more, the merrier. It's always great to engage with our audience and to get their thoughts, get their feedback, and just have a overall great time. So, yeah, once again, subscribe. Like, hit that notification bell. That way you know the next time we will be going live. And as Justin mentioned earlier in this pod, we're actually going live tomorrow, at least as time of recording, to talk about the sequel to Joker, Filet Adieu. We're going to be doing a trailer reaction pod, if you will. So join us for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very interested to hear what Frank and George have to say, because I think if it's going to be a musical, they're going to feel some type of way about it.
It's going to be a jukebox musical. Now, what does that mean? I'm not really sure, but there's going to be like 15 songs in the movie, whether it's like full, you know, full songs or portions of songs. Yeah, I know.
We're getting a reaction from Frank. So join us tomorrow for the Joker Filet Adieu trailer reaction. That'll happen here on YouTube. But we also ask everyone to go ahead and follow us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Watchers Basement. Give us a shout out by using the hashtag Watchers Basement to, one, not only help grow our audience, but to also let us know your thoughts on what it is that we're talking about. Send us memes, send us articles, send us things that you want us to check out. We'll add that to our ever-growing list of things to check out. That was a bit redundant. Sorry. And if you're not into video podcasts, we've got you covered with audio podcasts available to you on Spotify as well as Apple Podcasts. Follow us on those platforms and anywhere else that you might listen to audio podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. Oh, and as an incentive, how could I forget? If we get 1,000 subscribers, we'll release our private chats. That's right, y'all. Look at the reactions of my fellow watchers here. The embarrassment ensues, y'all. So help us get to 1,000 subscribers. But first, help us get to 300. We're very close to getting to 300. But 1,000, release of all our private chats.
Do we have access to the private chat? We don't have like an archive of it.
Justin, I need you to work with me here, sir. Good Lord. Also looking for a new host for the Watchers in the Basement.
I just don't want us to make promises we can't keep.
This one's fired. That's a promise I can't keep. Anyway, y'all, is it for my little social media spiel.
Frank, any final words before we get out of here?
Nah, man, let Black Magic cook, baby. Let's get it.
Love it.
Black Magic cooking like Mr. Sinister over there, just baking up some clones. Fresh clones. Yeah. So for Frank and for Brittany, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Have a good night. Bye-bye.